This podcast is part of the Acast Creator Network.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello and welcome to The Stand with Eamon Dunphy. Now, the British government has been in disarray in recent weeks. To put it mildly, revelations about a series of parties in Downing Street and the behaviour of the Prime Minister Boris Johnson. Lying has always been part of his character, but now it has been exposed in a very big way, and he is openly being called a liar by other politicians, including some in his own party, which is remarkable. And in the last 48 hours, things got worse, and yesterday they got even worse again. When, in relation to a party that was held in Downing Street in May 2020, it was the 20th of May 2020, Johnson has always claimed that he thought it was a work event when he walked into it. This is what he said in his House of Commons statement last week, and that he apologised. He didn't know it was going to happen, and if he had known, he wouldn't have gone along with it. Yesterday, his former chief advisor, Dominic Cummings, who is believed to be driving a lot of these leaks about the Johnson government, and particularly the Johnson Downing Street, came out and declared that he would be prepared to swear on oath that he, in fact, had warned Johnson that this was not the right thing to do and that Boris Johnson had to get a grip on the people who were organising this party. The persons whose name was on the email inviting over 100 people to the party was the principal private secretary to the Prime Minister, a man called Martin Reynolds. Since then, other revelations, including most damagingly and really sickeningly, on the night before Prince Philip's funeral, there were two parties in Downing Street which merged into one. They went out to a local supermarket late in the night to get booze and drank and sang and had a DJ until the early hours of that morning. The following day, the Queen was pictured at her husband's funeral, the man she'd wed 70 years ago, sitting alone, observing the rules and indeed the law with a black mask. It was a poignant reminder and a poignant contrast between what was happening in Downing Street and what she was doing and other families, of course, many of them, thousands of them in Britain, were doing, which was suffering by not being able to help with friends, relations, family who were dying, not even to be with them. We're joined now from London by Chris Johns. Chris is former chief economist of the Bank of Ireland, now a commentator in his own right, and he joins us from London. Chris, Dominic Cummings has yesterday put the boot in again, and yesterday also, of course, Boris Johnson gave his first interview for 6 days since he spoke at leaders' questions in the House of Commons. And it was a pool interview, which means that one journalist interviewed Johnson, Beth Rigby from Sky News, on behalf of five leading British broadcasters. What did you make of the interview?
Well, she did a terrific job. And frankly, Eamon, I think from Boris Johnson's perspective, it was the classic car crash interview. He was asked several questions. I think notable amongst many were the ones about what did you think? You entered a garden, you saw that there were trestle tables piled with food and drink. What about it did you not think was a party? Others have put it in slightly different terms. I noticed one prominent legal commentator commenting on that interview today, a chap called David Alan Green, summarizing it by saying, well, look, he was the head of the government that made the rules. He was the rule maker. He gave the press conferences. He held those various high-profile daily press conferences at which those rules were explained by him and others. He told Parliament about the rules. Boris Johnson himself explained to Parliament what the rules were. So the excuse that he gave Beth Rigby that he didn't know that it was a party holds no water at all. So I think that, as I say, it was a car crash. I think people can have seen through it immediately. The feedback that I've seen that others have given in the wake of this interview is consistent with that. The atmosphere in Westminster appears to be very febrile. Journalists are tweeting and issuing reports all over the place tonight in the wake of this. There have been reports from Laura Kunzberg, another prominent journalist in the UK, the BBC's political editor, that the 2019 intake of Red Wall MPs have been actually meeting. And some of them have told her that they are sending in letters. I mean, whether or not they do remains to be seen. And these are the famous letters to Graham Brady of the 1922 committee that will determine whether or not there is a leadership election or preceded by a vote of confidence in Johnson. That's the way it works. There's lots of these stories going around, lots of comments, lots of stories, lots of the way it works in the UK. A lot of these things are non-attributable. They're called lobby briefings that people have been. One cabinet minister has been disparaging those 2019 intake of Red Wall MPs, saying that they owed their position to Boris Johnson. And what are they doing rebelling against him? There's all this stuff swirling around. So it's pretty febrile. But there's nothing out of that interview. Your direct question, Eamon, about Beth Rigby's interview with Johnson, it seems to have made the situation for Johnson worse, not better.
Yes, indeed, and that was a clear impression, and we'll come back to that just in one moment, just to say that the weekend reports in the Sunday Times in particular said this would be the week in which Johnson would launch his fight back, and it was given a name. Operation Red Meat was one name, and the other name, amazingly, was Operation Save Big Dog. You couldn't make this stuff up. The Red Meat was in the form of the Royal Navy, for example, tackling the migrants in these small boats that are coming across from France. Another bit of the sort of red meat was a statement by Nadine Dorris, who is the culture secretary, a former Celebrity Big Brother contestant, who said yesterday, day before yesterday, in fact, that the BBC licence fee would be frozen for 2 years, and that from 2027, the BBC was likely to be a subscription-only service, which is effectively, it was in the manifesto, but it is a very serious attack on the BBC that may see the end of the BBC as we know it, Chris. So can you believe Operation Save Big Dog and Operation Red Meat actually being conceived in anything outside of a comedy show?
Quite frankly, I would have called it Operation Circular Firing Squad, the way it's been actually put together. You've got first on your first point about the Channel and migrants and this latest wizard wheeze, as I think Johnson might call it, to deploy the Royal Navy. This is the latest in a long list of suggestions that have come out to turn boats back, to use submarines, to use third world countries in which to establish refugee camps, all of which have come to absolutely nothing.
Also, Chris, if I may interrupt you, to use a sonic boom.
I was coming to that.
Sorry, yes. go ahead because it's really shocking.
We've heard suggestions that they were going to use sonic booms to try and deflect, deter, turn back these boats. So these suggestions get more fanciful by the day. I've no idea whether they will deploy the Royal Navy. I'd be very surprised if they do. If they did, I can only imagine that the officers and men and women of the Royal Navy would do it in the most half-hearted of fashion. I've heard from various places that the Royal Navy itself is not keen on this idea at all, to say the least. They're not sure about the legality of it. They're not sure what the consequences would be. Imagine if there was an accident. Imagine if there were injuries or worse. What would actually happen in those circumstances? So I do think that it will go down. My guess is that it will be just the latest in a series of proposals, each more fanciful than the last, in which nothing will actually happening. The BBC, this was a rushed announcement. There have been ongoing discussions between the Culture Secretary, between the government and the BBC for some time now about the future of the licence fee. As you say, this has been around for a while, and the threats against the BBC have been public and many and varied over the last while. The government does not like the BBC. We know that, and you and I have talked about that in the various ways that it's manifest. But this was a rushed announcement that surprised everybody, not least the BBC itself, because this was not supposed to have happened now. And notably, Doris rode back from that commitment to turn it into a subscription service, to abolish the license fee. She said afterwards, she clarified her remarks in that time-honored phrase to say that that is still open for discussion. But clearly, this was saber-rattling in order to do the Boris thing. This was a bone or red meat being thrown to the right-wing backbenchers of the Conservative Party, who loathe and detest the BBC and would see nothing, would love to see it turned into a subscription service, would love to see it defenestrated. But, you know, it speaks to the unseriousness, at least, of this government. If you think about the other slogans that they use and consider about how we've talked about the empty rhetoric around policies to do with the Channel, the empty rhetoric around so many things, the key policy of levelling up has only ever been a slogan. There's not been a single policy announced that has any substance behind it to do what they promise to do. They promised to defenestrate the BBC and then they row back from it. It's very, very unserious government. The actual meat, if I might say, behind all of these policies is always absent. It's shocking how unserious these people actually are.
Yes, and another policy that they made much of during the general election, in fact, was levelling up. Now, this was an appeal that would have resonated in what's the so-called red wall seats, which are the more deprived areas where they won seats. And remarkably, they won a by-election in Hartlepool, which is incredible for anyone who knows Hartlepool. Michael Gove is charged with producing a paper on levelling up sometime in the next few weeks. Can you explain to us what levelling up is?
It's been around for a very long time. Levelling up is what every government of every modern country tries to do. In Ireland, you try to do it with the regions of the country essentially outside the main cities. It's called rural development, it's called regional development, and every country tries to introduce some kind of equalization of the economic gap between your great metropolises, your successful economic regions, and the less successful bits of your country. In the UK, the least developed bits of the UK are anything essentially outside the major cities in general, but in particular the southeast of England. The southeast of England, London, and the rest, in many ways, they are separate economies and very often separate cultures. And when Johnson won this election in 2019, with what was called the red wall seats, which is called that because of the way in which they were previously seen to be Labour strongholds, working class voting strongholds. The surprise was that they all voted for the Tories. It was deemed because that they had fallen so far behind essentially the southeast of England economically that they'd been let down by Labour, which contained an element of truth. So Johnson, in order to consolidate that victory, has promised to level up, to equalize the economic gap between the northeast, the northwest, bits of Wales. Scotland is never mentioned in leveling up, by the way, but it's usually about the north of England and parts of the Midlands. And the point about, this is a point I can make as an economist, and knowing how many countries over many years have tried to do this, and most of the time you fail. There are certain things, economic laws or laws of history, that I could point you to more failures than successes. Where you can succeed in equalizing regional economic development, it takes an awful long time and an awful lot of very complicated policy making requiring deep thinking and an awful lot of money. And the two things that Johnson doesn't have right now are a lot of money, as Sunak keeps reminding him, and he certainly, from all the other things that we keep speaking about, doesn't display any evidence of deep thinking at all. Now, Gove is a thinker. He may come up with some interesting things, but he can only do it if he's given some money by Sunak. And the consequences of that money will only come through over a very long period of time and won't help Johnson in the short term.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Now, Beth Rigby's interview. Let's return to that because it lasted 16 minutes. As I said, it was a pool interview and it was on behalf of all the other broadcasters. And they chose very wisely. Beth Rigby is Sky's political editor and she is outstanding. And this really was a fairly tough interrogation. And there are two things that emerge I want to ask you about. Beth Rigby said when Johnson denied that he had known anything about it, or indeed that he had been warned by Dominic Cummings or anybody else, and in fact Beth Rigby had a second source for that story. He also denied knowing about the controversial email that was sent as an invite. When Beth Rigby put it to him, and she put it to him four or five times, are you saying that Dominic Cummings is lying? He refused to answer. He didn't say, yes, Dominic Cummings is lying, which was, I thought, very significant. He kind of went off on a classic liar's sort of distraction move. The second question that she asked him, and this will bring us to Rishi Sunak. Would you agree, Prime Minister, that if somebody misleads the House of Commons, they should resign? Would you resign if Sue Gray, the senior civil servant who is conducting an investigation into all of these allegations, If she finds that you have misled the House of Commons, will you resign? She asked him that 3 or 4 times, and again, he refused to answer. It's very, very damning, and you described it as a car crash. It certainly seemed to me to be evasive and defensive, and the behavior and the words of someone who was in an indefensible position.
Yeah, I mean, perhaps the best summary of the Rigby interview is being given by Rigby herself, in which, and I'll quote what she said in her report afterwards, Boris Johnson looked beaten, distressed, and out of options. I asked him repeatedly if it emerges that he misled Parliament, whether he would resign. He didn't rule it out. He said he would wait for the Sue Gray report. Now, one of the things that's emerged since this interview, we didn't know whether this was going to be the case up until very recently, is that Gray is now going to interview Dominic Cummings.
Yes.
And Cummings has stated that he is willing to testify on oath. Now, Gray's inquiry is not a court-based inquiry that requires people to swear on oath, but it's quite clear what Cummings is going to say to Sue Gray. And Johnson so far, and the team around Johnson that is protecting him, that has launched Operation Red Meat, which has launched this operation to try and save him, has been relying on Sue Gray to just simply report matters of fact and not to say that Johnson must have known whether this yes. work event was in fact a party. Now, if that assumption begins to crumble as a result of her interviewing Dominic Cummings in particular, but also the other people who are currently unnamed, various lobby correspondents have been saying today that they have been told by other people, people other than Dominic Cummings, that what Cummings said is true, that Johnson was warned. If these people are willing to go on the record with Sue Gray, and she does say something like, it is very hard for this civil servant to conclude that Mr. Johnson didn't know that it was a party, then he clearly is toast. Absolutely. Yes. He's gone. And if it begins to...
You mean that if they say he did know it was a party?
Right. If he did know that it was a party, if this yeah. claim that he didn't know cannot be stood up, if it's quite clear, because it's not just Cummings. We had a report in the Sunday Times. There's a columnist in the Sunday Times called Dominic Lawson, the ex-chancellor,
yes.
and Nigel Lawson's son, in which he explicitly repeated Cummings' claim about Johnson knowing it was a party, about having it from a different source than Cummings. So it's not just Cummings. It's people like Lawson going on the record, and it's lots of people at the moment not on the record, merely briefing journalists. So the assumption that is absolutely key to all of this is that the Gray report won't finger Johnson. If that starts to change over the next day or two as a result of her interviewing Cummings, then I think Johnson is gone in days, quite frankly. He might even go before the publication of the report. If he gets the nod from either Sue Gray herself or somebody close to Sue Gray that their working assumption about the presumption of Johnson's innocence, about taking what he has said about not knowing that it was a party on face value, if that crumbles, then he could well go before the report is actually published.
Yes, and there's another scenario in which that might serve him, Chris. If the 54 letters required reach Sir Graham Brady, the chairman of the 1922 committee, before Sue Gray reports, Johnson will then have to face a vote of confidence. And should he win it, he couldn't be challenged again for 12 months. And that idea has been floated. Now, you were the first person to suggest here on this podcast that he would use a distraction. I must say you failed to come up with Operation Save Big Dog or Operation Red Meat. What you did come up with was the idea that he would pick a fight with Europe using the Northern Ireland Protocol as a pretext. Since you said that, of course, Lord Frost is gone and Liz Truss is now the Foreign Secretary. She's been given the Northern Ireland and Brexit negotiations as part of her brief as Foreign Secretary. But she is also, along with Rishi Sunak, one of the two people tipped to be favourite to, although Sunak is the hot favourite, but she is tipped to contest any subsequent election. So maybe that rules the Northern Ireland theory out. But when Rishi Sunak was asked in his interview about believing Boris Johnson, he said, yes, I believe him. He said, but we'll have to wait for Sugray's report. And he continued to say, and this is the rub, if you like, that, of course, these matters are obvious. If somebody is shown, if the Prime Minister is shown to have broke the ministerial code by misleading the House of Commons, we're clear what has to happen. So that was a direct threat, really, to Johnson.
Yes. Now, the ministerial code is very clear. It's a British construct. It's part of our quasi-constitution, if you like, that if you lie to Parliament and you don't correct that lie pretty yes. quickly, you're gone. You're expected to resign. Now, Johnson has ridden a coach and horses through all sorts of previous protocols, understandings and agreements, not least through lying to the Queen to prorogue Parliament, for example. So
yes.
anything is possible with him. He's capable of ignoring any conventions, including this one. But it's both Raab, the Deputy Prime Minister, and Sunak today have used, interestingly, the same form of words, which is that people, anyone who lies to Parliament is expected to resign unless they correct the lie very quickly and apologise. They gave Johnson a get-out. But today, of course, Johnson has doubled down. He hasn't said that I inadvertently lied to Parliament and therefore I'm very, very sorry. He has doubled down on this simple fact that he didn't know that it was a party. So I don't see how he could, if he is caught or if he is fingered by Sue Gray or indeed anybody else who's willing to go on the record and saying that, you know, if, for example, the civil servant concerned who sent out the invite said that Boris Johnson did, in fact, read that email. Boris Johnson and I had a discussion. If somebody like that comes out of the woodwork, and incidentally, I don't think this is over yet in terms of people coming out of the woodwork, because the drip way and all these revelations have come out have, you know, strongly suggest that there could well be more to come. Then I think that both Sunak and Raab's words, I think, were very significant today, that the Prime Minister is expected to resign. As you say, Raab and Sunak are both potential successors. As Sunak is the betting favourite. But there's an old expression, beyond cliche almost, that he who wields the knife doesn't get to wear the crown. So they have to express loyalty. They have to say things like, I believe in. Sunak is not going to knife Johnson in public. But what's going on behind closed doors now is going to be discussions about leadership campaigns, about funding for leadership campaigns, and about where the votes are going to lie with the potential no confidence vote, and then what happens after that. This is all going on at the moment now. It's very febrile.
Yes, and just a final couple of questions, Chris. The mood of the people in Britain that has been repeatedly referenced in all of this over the past couple of weeks, and it's almost to a crescendo now, that Tory MPs are getting it in the neck from their constituents, particularly those in the Redwall area seats where they have fairly relatively slender majorities. The mood of Britain at the moment, and in the context of that, you may or may not know that one of these parties, one of the more egregious ones in Downing Street, was held to say goodbye to a man called James Slack, a senior civil servant. And Slack has left to become deputy editor of The Sun. So there is what's notable about this, though, is that The Telegraph and most of the Conservative newspapers have also taken against Johnson in a big way.
Yeah, they know that the mood of their own readers, they can measure it, they can hear it, they can see it, they can read
it. What are you finding when you among your own friends? I mean, and acquaintances,
that people are incandescent. I mean, I don't know whether my own friends and acquaintances are representative of the people as a whole, but I have spoken to a lot of people about this over the last few days.
I'm sure they're not.
and I have a wide range of friends. They some of them even have regional accents, Eamon. And everybody, people I know who vote Tory, are incandescent about this. It's almost 100%. I can't find anybody who has any sympathy for Johnson whatsoever. The talk show radio, even in the usual suspects who are not particularly pro-Johnson, but even the ones that in the past would have been, you can hear it on the airwaves. There's a well-known talk show host. He's admittedly anti-Johnson at the best of times. Put it very well, I think, and captured the mood of the country in his show this morning, in which he described as, you know, what is this country become? What is this country that I am bringing my children up in? What have we become that we are led by such second-rate people? What is this country, he said, about how that essentially we have a squabble between two overprivileged, entitled schoolboys. This is Johnson and Cummings that he's referring to, of course. And this is beyond soap opera. This is beyond Albert Square, the EastEnders soap opera that many people watch every night. It's worse than that, because we've got one schoolboy, public schoolboy, falling out with another because one rowd had a big row with the other's wife. It's beyond parody. And and I think that question, what has become of my country, is certainly, I've heard lots of my friends, lots of my acquaintance ask that very, very fundamental question.
Yep. And they put satirists out of business with the Big Dog Save Big Dog and Operation Red Meat, Chris. We're very grateful to you for joining us on the stand. Thank you very much indeed. That was Chris Johns. We're grateful to Chris, to all of you for listening, of course. That's all we have time for now. We'll talk to you soon.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.